Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of the Pro Wrestling Opinion Show, and we are running down three more of the greatest matches in the universe, and we are talking once again to One Silva. What's up, man?
Hey, good evening, Logan. Good evening, wrestling fans.
Happy New Year to everybody, and we're back, man. And this these three matches, man, there was a little confusion about the Lawler-Bockwinkel thing. How many matches did Lawler and Bockwinkel have?
They had a. This is the second of a trilogy that went three straight weeks in Memphis. The reason the confusion was this wasn't shown until January 1st, 1984, but the match took place October 25th, 1982.
And it was quite a match. And we have that one and two more. Why don't you tell them what they are?
And ironically, all six wrestlers will be watching tonight in all three matches. All members of the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, and six of the greatest, you could say definitely six of the top 10, top 20 wrestlers of all time. From October 25th, 1982, the aforementioned match between AWA World Champion Nick Bockwinkel, defending that world championship against Jerry the King Lawler in Memphis, Tennessee. Then we go to June 5th, 1992, the All Japan Triple Crown World Champion, Stan the Lariat Hansen, defending the title against Toshiaki Kawada. And the final match from Japan also, September 15th, 1992, Nature Boy Ric Flair defending the World Wrestling Federation Championship against Genichiro Tenryu.
Oh, okay. So this was Ric Flair from WWF at
yes.
This moment. Wow, that's interesting. Now, when you... this promotion, though, the Japanese promotion that he was performing for was different.
World Sports, who had a talent exchange with agreement with the WWF.
Right on. So we got three great matches, man. And so let's talk about the first one here. We got this is where Jerry Lawler was dreaming for the gold, right? I mean, was this part of his campaign?
Yeah, Jerry Lawler's always the main theme for Jerry Lawler when he became the top face in Memphis from the late 70s up until the close of the promotion was his goal, his quest to become world champion. And this is one of many matches in which they draw a great crowd and he goes for that dream of his, the world championship.
And does he ever achieve it ever?
Yeah, one of the matches we covered here from May 9th, 1988 when he defeated Curt Hennig for the AWA World Championship.
Oh, that's right. Yes, and but I mean, it was a long road coming at before that, many attempts. So this one was a close one. So let's talk about it. We get into this match, and we hear that Bockwinkel has made fun of Jerry Lawler, has discredited his wrestling ability.
What I love about Nick Bockwinkel, one of the greatest promos of all time, is that he and Chris Jericho, like you mentioned earlier, took his style and used it later on in his career, where he would tell the truth by pissing off the fans and the baby face by pointing out something that was the truth. Jerry Lawler didn't know a headlock from a wrist lock, so he was making fun of Jerry Lawler. And he was
Yes. Smaller,
a puncher, which basically that's what Jerry Lawler was.
Yeah, Jerry Lawler's kind of whole gimmick, if you kind of even look at the way he's dressed, is he's the strong man from, like, the circus, who's, like, really strong, a great brawler, great puncher, and has a lot of heart. but is not necessarily skilled in fighting. He's just
not going to out wrestle you, but he'll out brawl you. Yes,
he'll out will you, and he has the Hulk up thing, which he does not once usually, but he does twice, which I think is more exciting.
Yes.
And which I thought was great because, like, the first one is pretty big.
I don't know why they call it the Hulk up thing because he did that before Hulk Hogan. I think the first person that did that was, I think Dick the Bruiser did that back in the 50s. And I know Bruno Sammartino used to do it before Lawler and Hogan.
Well, it's a common babyface thing to do, but especially for the strong style babyfaces. And he's definitely no exception with that. He does it very well. And, yeah, I mean, he did it first before Hogan. But talk about the history of Lawler.
Say it again?
Talk about the history of Lawler.
Oh, Jerry Lawler was the number one heel in Memphis throughout the 70s until late, I don't know if it was 79 or 80, he broke his leg in real life, and he was out for a year. And Jimmy Hart was his manager. And so throughout that whole year Lawler was out, Jimmy Hart was making fun of Lawler. Oh, baby, he broke his leg. Oh, wow, whoop-dee-doo, he's not coming back. We don't need Jerry Lawler. So by the time Jerry Lawler came back, the fans were on his side because Jimmy Hart had run him down for a whole year. And from that moment on, he became the King of Memphis.
So he started out a heel.
Yeah, he was a heel. He would feud with Jackie Fargo, who was the original King of Memphis.
But he was a different kind of heel than the heel we see in WWF later. That clowny heel.
He was a smart, alecky, wimpy heel. While in Memphis, he was, you know, he was a cocky heel. Very arrogant, very very funny. Very nasty.
More like Kurt Hennig, maybe.
Yes. While in the WWF, he was more of a cartoon character.
So, up until this point now, this is 82. How long is he into his run?
Well, as the number one babyface, 3 years. I think he started in 74, so 8 years as the number one attraction in Memphis.
Now, let's be real here. He booked himself that way, right? He owned part of the promotion, did he not?
He owned part of the promotion with Jerry Jarrett, but there'd be no Memphis without Jerry Lawler.
Well, that explains that. Like, how do you explain Flair? I mean, did he have some kind of part ownership?
It was rare when a guy owned a promotion. The Sheik owned Detroit, so he always pushed himself on top. Lawler was half owner with Jarrett, but he wasn't always the owner. That was a way of Jarrett keeping Lawler from jumping ship to another promotion.
Oh, I see. I got you. And he probably would have stayed. He shouldn't have moved. He was fine where he was. He's perfect.
Yeah, but by him having 50% of Memphis, of that territory, I mean, him leaving, he's in a more draw. One time he did leave to take 6 months off, and he had to come back early because the gates had died.
Yeah, he was the one-man show propping that shit open. Now, when he gets in here now with this AWA champ now, wasn't they part of Crockett at one point or not really? It's totally separate.
Who?
His division there, the...
Memphis. You know about Memphis?
Memphis. Yeah, Memphis.
No, Memphis was always a AWA territory, and in 84, 85, a conglomerate of promoters, Memphis, Crockett, Watts, Georgia, got together and formed the Pro Wrestling USA, which they combined, they tried to combine their talents to go up against McMahon in the WWF. It failed because you had too many chiefs.
Absolutely. So you now have this match here, with AWA champion Nick Bockwinkel going up against him in his own Memphis here. He's finally getting the chance that he's got. So you got Bockwinkel coming in and getting some good old-fashioned wrestling holds on him, doing arm locks and hammer locks and the wrist locks on him. And he keeps trying to power out of him, but, like, basically Bockwinkel displays his wrestling ability and laughs about it. And eventually I think he powers out of his thing there and he starts to get some momentum.
The first 10 minutes is him wrestling Lawler. But once Lawler gets out of the holes, he breaks out of a wrist lock and turns it into a brawl, Lawler dominates the rest of the match.
Yeah, Lawler, I mean, he's getting beat on in the beginning, and then he comes back with a crossbody. I mean, he throws him, he crossbodies him. They really put over Lawler's strengths here in this match here, like over the technical ability. But they also put over the strength of Bockwinkel, which and they talk about these two big men.
And like, you have these two master workers, master manipulators, so there's no way in the world it's not going to be a great match. These guys know how to work the crowd. Bockwinkel knows how to make his guy look better, and Lawler knows how to feed off the crowd and play to his strengths. And goddamn, did anybody ever throw a better work punch in the history of wrestling than Jerry Lawler?
Yeah, when Jerry Lawler comes back, like, and he's
it looks like
throwing...
he's fucking you out the fuck out with that right hand.
Oh yeah, but it's weird because he kind of throws them like almost like a cartoon. But at the same time, they're fast and they
They look like they're going through you. They're not falling short. I mean, no one threw a better work punch in the history of wrestling than Jerry Lawler. The closest one was Terry Funk.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. Yeah, you really look like he is beating. I was watching him also against Andy Kaufman, and he laid it in there too. It looked like he really killed
him. One match against Jerry Andy Kaufman where he looked like he broke his neck with a punch. But he never touched them.
Right. But anyway, so when we talk about this match now, like, he cuts to come back, right? He has his little Hulk up moment. There's basically, like, a big fucking pop for that. But I think somehow, I guess, through an eye gouge, Bockwinkel gets the upper hand again.
You're right, yes.
So there's this, and you know, Bockwinkel doesn't do a lot of his stalling that he did, you know, a lot of his matches here. He went right in on him here, and this match is pretty like eventful. It's not a slow match by any means, which I thought a lot of Nick Bockwinkel matches often.
And Logan, it would depend on who his opponent was. If he fought a stiff like a Baron von Roschke who couldn't move, yeah, he had no choice but to kill time. You know. Make it longer. But when he wrestled a seasoned worker like a Jerry Lawler, like a Rick Martel, like a Curt Hennig, he didn't have to do that bullshit.
Yeah, now there's a ref bump here, or at least the
that's the pivotal part of the match. Lawler has Bockwinkel in the corner and he's raking him with those great work punches, and referee Jerry Calhoun tries to break him up. He throws him out of the way twice. Finally,
oh, no, wait, before that, though.
Oh, the headbutt. Oh, yes, it looked like they actually banged heads. You're right, that first one.
Yeah, where he throws Lawler into the ref.
Lawler right into Calhoun, right.
And it's because Lawler does an eye gouge. Lawler does an eye gouge on him, and then he throws Lawler into the ref, and they knock heads, and then it's Lawler actually, I think, has him or no, Bockwinkel comes down with an elbow, and then the ref comes back and gets two, but then Bockwinkel's thrown out of the ring. And then King basically starts bouncing his head into the turnbuckle and
bashes his head into the table outside the ring.
Yeah, and the timer's table. Yeah. Then he fucking throws him back in, but he puts his foot on the rope, you know, the Ric Flair move.
Yeah.
That's where fucking Bockwinkel gets an eye gouge, and then rubs that. He does a great move where he rubs Lawler's face on the rope, you know, across it. It's pretty
He's
fucking...
like rope burn, yes.
Yeah, after he gives him the eye gouge. So that dude's all fucked up. And then he hulks up again. After Bockwinkel's just beating the shit out of him, he fucking hulks up one more time. And this time it's huge. The cheering is unbelievable. And that's where you see these crazy... flurry of punches.
Oh, I mean, he was just landing one shot after another. And then
he gets him in the corner, and the ref tries to pull him off. And he
tosses Calhoun twice. The third time, Bockwinkel hits Calhoun, and this is great drama. Talk about great booking. Lawler finishes him off and has him for the three count, and Lawler counts to three. As soon as Lawler hits the three count, the referee rings the bell, so everybody thinks Lawler's won the title.
Yeah, and the ref looks like he raised Lawler's hand right after that, so I didn't get it. Like,
as soon
was it
as Lawler hit three, the referee raised his hand. So Russell's going crazy. The dream has come true!
Yeah, it's the dream, all right. It's the dusty finish, right? I mean, that's what it was.
And so the referee disqualifies Bockwinkel for knocking him out. And so even though Lawler wins, Bockwinkel retains the title. And they have one more match, which is a no DQ match the following week, which sells out fucking Mid-South Coliseum. Of course, Bockwinkel holds on, wins the title, leaves Memphis, not to be seen again. I think this is his last run because he loses the title less than 18 months later to Martel. And Martel had a match with Lawler. I got to find that. That was supposed to be a pretty good match.
Yeah, man. I used to like fun of him on Strikeforce where he like slapped his hands and clenched his fists. Like him and Tito Santana used to have that same move. That's why they put them together, I guess. They like, you know, that like Pedro Morales move, you know, you do with
yeah,
your hands.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's talk. So he never got the title, but eventually he won it from Curt Hennig, but he never beat Bockwinkel.
6 years later. Real quickly, the chronology was Bockwinkel will lose the title for a couple of months after this to Otto Wanz in Germany. Otto Wanz loses it back to Bockwinkel. Then Bockwinkel loses the title to Jumbo Tsuruta. Tsuruta loses it to Rick Martel. Rick Martel loses to Stan Hansen. Stan Hansen leaves for Japan, gives up the belt, so they forfeit it to Bockwinkel. Bockwinkel loses it to Curt Hennig. Curt Hennig loses it. Who did Curt Hennig lose it to after Bockwinkel? Oh, to Jerry Lawler. We just mentioned that. Lawler gives it up because the AWA is not paying him. So he gives it up, and Larry Zbyszko wins the title, and Larry Zbyszko loses to Saito. Mr. Saito, loses back to Zbyszko, and then the AWA folds up at 19.
Yeah, and now you are the current AWA champion.
AWA. I mean, I think Zbyszko still defends it from time to time.
Hey, dude, anyone who can remember that history deserves the title. That's what I think.
All right, next match, Big Bang. Go ahead.
So let's go into this. We want to do Flair?
No, we're going to do Kawada versus Hansen from
Christ. This
All
shit.
Japan, yes. Now, this is a fucking
crazy
war. This is, look, the most educated feat in the history of professional wrestling is Toshiaki Kawada's feat. Those fucking kicks from anywhere, everywhere, unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, man. I wish he was in MMA, man. He would have fucked you. He would have so conned people onto the ground, like coming over him and then hit him with one of those kicks, man, and won. So, Hansen has a belt. He's the champion. He's the world champion of the division.
All Japan world champion, triple crown world champion. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So he's coming in. He's strong arming the motherfucker right away. And he's got like a pretty big size advantage on Kawada. But he's manhandling him at first. He's slapping him, punching him, showing him that he doesn't really respect him. But then he gets a few fucking forearms into his face real fast from Kawada. And, like, he understands that he's in for some fight here because then there's, like, some great just hand-to-hand combat here between the two of them. And you really see these, it shows the skill of Hansen because he's got, like, some martial arts skills himself. I mean, let's see.
He's got two ham hocks for hands, too.
But he's got throwing some good blocks, and then they go outside and they're back in with Hansen wrenching the leg, and he finally just slams Kawada, but then Kawada tries to slam him off, and it basically he's back on the hold. So he seems to be working on his leg, as he knows his leg is his biggest strength. You know what I'm saying? So
and one thing about Kawada sold like no one else could, and he sold that leg even when he would land with kicks. He would still favor his leg, but I mean,
well, he never balanced on that leg to throw a kick. If you noticed, that was the kick leg, but so he threw it fine, but he wouldn't balance on it because he acted like he could barely stand on it.
He was selling the leg, something
right.
That's a lost art in professional wrestling, except
yes.
Guys out of Japan.
Yeah, so he's selling the leg, so that's an added factor is that he's got a bum leg now that he's. You know, that Hansen was smart to take out, and he's been working on it. He even hits him with that Ric Flair knee breaker on the guardrail with that on that fucking leg. And he comes back to the apron and gets a a big kick to the head from Kawada, who kind of comes back.
Oh, that was spectacular. Yes.
Kawada's limping now. He's limping hard, and Kawada charges but runs into a huge fucking elbow from Hansen. He's slammed and kicked to the fucking I think he's kicked in the balls.
Yes, but, he is. Yes, he is.
Yeah, okay, so he's they're back wrestling on that leg and ankle lock and all that, and they're fucking, he's wrenching that thing. It looks like he's going to tear it off. And then Kawada punches him out and fucking kicks the shit out of him.
Kawada's in trouble in this match. He kicks the shit out of him.
Like that's basically what he does. I mean, it's like, and then you got outside, he puts fucking Kawada, I mean, he puts Hansen into the guardrail. Then he fucking he gets shoulder tackled into the guardrail.
Yes.
And fucking those tackles, man, they're like, they don't really have much padding down there. They're just like ramming into that shit. So I mean, it looks like they're connecting in most of these.
Like All Japan, like we've mentioned a million times before, because we've done several All Japan matches on this program. They're told to work stiff, strong style. Shit in there, trying to hurt the guy.
So yeah, so we get
Now I saw blood on Hansen's stomach. Where that shit was coming from?
I don't know, man. But
I got cut in his stomach because Hansen at one point was acting like he got stabbed or some shit.
Kawada gets shoulder tackled by Hansen from the fucking apron to the floor.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but then he gets. Then I guess Kawada gets a kick up when Hansen charges in again. On I guess, and then basically we get a Kawada really selling the leg, really fucking limping. Kicks Hansen in the head as he tries to come in. Hansen,
I can't even describe those kicks. There was one kick, Logan, where he went up in the air and just kicked him in the neck. I don't even know what the fuck you call that shit.
Well, there's one point where Hansen's circling around the ring trying to figure out how to come in on Kawada, and it looks like he comes in after circling like all the way around, and he still gets beat the fuck up. So, I mean, it didn't really help him to do that circling. Kawada almost pins Hansen like two times. Hansen then comes back with a punch to the gut and a snap suplex like Dynamite Kid.
Oh, that was Dynamite Kid-esque. That was like a 300-pound Dynamite Kid suplex.
Yeah, and then Kawada blocks a big boot and then kicks the shit out of Hansen in the corner. Kawada almost gets the pin, and then Kawada drops an elbow off the apron onto Hansen.
Great, because he did it so quick.
Yeah. I mean, you blink and you miss some stuff here. Hansen's coming out, like knocked out of the ring at this point, and I see him coming into the ring, and he's got one of those streamers coming out of his ass.
And then also, he's bleeding out. He's got blood on his stomach. That's what I was wondering, where that fucking cut came from.
Yeah, he's got like one of those Italian weddings happening from his butthole. But he keeps trying to come back with. Kawada keeps trying to come back with forearms, but like Hansen keeps getting the upper hand of this exchange. It's really tough for Kawada at this point. He just keeps trying to come back, and Hansen keeps trying to put him back down. So it's like, why don't you go through what that happens toward the end of this match here?
Well, what happens? I believe Hansen hits him in the back of the head, and then he picks up Kawada and slaughters him with that lariat to get the 1-2-3. Once he hits that lariat, it's over. You don't even have to.
Yeah.
And Hansen wins a spectacular match, holds on to the title. Another great match. And ironically, in the 1990s, All Japan was the best promotion on the planet because they did the strong style. But unfortunately, too many guys got hurt or died during that period. Kawada and Hansen are the only two from that promotion that were that were pushed hard that didn't suffer any ill effects after they retired.
Huh. That's crazy. So they're
died early. Terry Gordy died early. Mitsuharu Misawa died in the ring. Kenta Kobashi had cancer twice. There you go.
Wow. Well, that's all you got to know, man. Now,
Furnace had early Alzheimer's, died young. All these guys that were pushed that were in these matches, except for Hansen and Kawhi.
So now, okay, so here we are. We have one more match here. But you want to talk about how he lost the title?
He won the title 2 weeks before this, Ric Flair.
Hansen.
Oh, well, Hansen would lose the title 2 months later to Mitsuharu Misawa.
Right, but I'm saying, you're saying he won it from Ric Flair?
No. You after this match, after Hansen beats Kawhi, he holds it for 2 more months. No, Blair's in a different promotion.
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand what you said. Okay, all right. So tell me about the title. You're saying that he drops the title at this point after that. Okay, fine. So let's go to the next match here.
Blair had won the title 2 weeks prior to this match for the second time, the WF title, by beating Randy Savage.
And what was he cheat? Did he cheat to win? I forget.
Well, what happened was Randy. Remember in the SummerSlam 92 match between Savage and Ultimate Warrior, Kurt Hennig and Ric Flair attacked Savage after the match was over and beat his leg. And that basically had him one-legged a couple of days later when he lost the title to Ric Flair. And Razor Ramon interfered in that match as well.
And so, okay, so we have Ric Flair here as the heel WWF World Champion. Now, this was sanctioned by WWE, but they acted like this thing didn't happen, right?
Yeah, well, if you look at the link I sent you, it will say on top in Japanese, the only letters you could see are WWF. So it's like WWF in Japanese, World Champion Ric Flair versus Chinichiro Tenryu.
Interesting. Okay, so we got this match here. These two, this guy, Tenryu, had they met before?
Yeah, we covered their first match, April of 92, on the show about 6 months ago.
And this was him also as the WWE champion?
This was after he had lost the title to Savage the first time.
Okay. So now he's coming in with the title. He's coming in the full Flair fucking image. He comes in, the first thing he does at the beginning of the match is give a woo, and he gets it back from the whole crowd. It's amazing, man. So he's big in Japan, Flair.
Flair is big wherever the fuck he wants to go. Flair is the man.
Yeah, he's the greatest of all time by far. But so we see some good grappling here. We see Flair showing his skills. He's no slouch in this
and
stuff.
And by the way, real quickly, before you recap the match, the one knock against Flair has been that he has the same match over and over again. This match looks like no other match he has, all right?
No, and he still gets in his Flair spots, too, which is great.
He's working a totally different match. It's not the same match. It's not a formula-type Ric Flair match.
Right, but he gets his signatures there, like the flop,
yeah,
the fucking top rope, you know.
He even throws a drop kick in this match, which he never does.
He does a lot of good stuff in this match. Now he gets some advantages. He does, but he gets kicked, clotheslined in the corner and chopped really hard. Then he does a Flair flop. But Flair then gets the upper hand for a while. He gets the arm and actually tries to submit him with the arm. Then he gets the sleeper and he keeps screaming out, "He's out! He's out! Askel, he's out!" and he throws him into the ropes, gets the sleeper again, and then Tenryu finally gets a big clothesline off the corner, or out of the corner, and then Flair is out of the ring holding his neck, and then he plays possum in the corner, and then Tenryu charges in and gets fucking kicked, and then there was a chop that actually, fucking hurt.
Was it the four? Were they going at each other with the devastating chops? I mean, to me, my favorite segment of the match was when they were hitting beat the shit out of each other with one chop and one slap after another.
Yeah, it was definitely the chop wars going on here. And it looked like Tenryu was getting the better of Flair. I mean, Flair always gives it up on the chops. Like, it's funny because, like, as much as he's known for his chops, he always lets his guy, like the people he fights.
It depends on who he's wrestling. Like if it's Pillman in his prime, Steamboat, McDaniel, Teneru, he'll give those guys the better, because those guys have great chops. But if it's Randy Savage or Hulk Hogan, he won't give them the advantage. He'll have them do something else.
Yeah, yeah. And so so Flair, it's weird because Flair, in a lot of cases, like he plays possum in this match and then like attacks. Then he does his body slam spot, you know, where he gets caught. And then he goes for the knee breaker, but then gets reversed in some kind of weird. He turns the other guy turns it into a weird suplex. He gets the first fall through a pretty light looking power bomb, I have to say. But then
that was a botch spot. It was like he was worried about hurting Flair's back. That was a fucking weak ass power bomb.
then Flair gets caught in a real sleeper, like a rear naked choke sleeper. Now, just explain to me quick. The rule is that like if you get a choke on the guy, you're not allowed to do that, right?
Yeah, the rule is supposed to not go below the guy's chin.
Yeah, which I mean, in MMA, it's like they choke you out. You know,
yeah, they
like,
choke
so,
you out. Yeah,
and that's kind of what he gets on Flair. He gets the legs wrapped and everything, so he's there
he's
like
got,
on.
He's got his legs wrapped in a vice, and he's got him in the sleeper hole.
Yeah, he's totally like choking the fuck out of him. And Flair, I guess he get the ropes? I'm not sure how he gets out of it.
That looked like an MMA move, right? That they use that today, right? Where they put your whole body in one shot like that.
Yeah. So then there's Flair goes for that long suplex, and then he almost gets the pin. There's a chop war, and then he gets that eye poke on him. This classic dirty player game for Flair. And then he goes for the knee breaker, and that turns into a fucking suplex. He doesn't quite get it. So they're really building up this fucking figure four leg lock, you know, that it's coming and that Flair's...
There is the master at breaking your body part down so he could eventually put the hold on.
Teneru goes for the fucking figure four and ends up, like, getting kicked off. He gets a there's a big fight. He finally gets the figure four, and he gets the second fall through that, you know, because Teneru passes out from the pain.
Passes out, yeah.
And then you get Flair trying to put the figure four on, but then Teneru gets some weird heel hook on him and starts trying to submit him while he's in the figure four, which
that
is awesome.
That was just classic back and forth. That's just classic strategy. It was like these guys are trying to outmaneuver the other guy.
Yeah, and it's a classic stuff here because they're like going back and forth. Like Flair reestablishes the figure four, but then Teneru like gets that heel hook back on, and they go back and forth with that for a while. And so it's just kind of it's just a back and forth with this one move that's getting over huge with the crowd. You know, like I don't know if this would go over with an American crowd, but. I mean, maybe in the Crockett territory it would because the move is over big, but they did something here that I hadn't seen done with it. You know, it was just like with a guy getting a heel hook on it, and that's where Flair almost passes out, and then he goes for the figure four again, but then gets rolled up, he doesn't get the pin. He does another fucking Flair flop. And then Teneru goes to the top. Flair hits his leg and knocks him right off to the floor. And then he clips his leg. And then he gets the Teneru's leg on the rope and fucking sits on it, you know, working him up for the figure four. Another knee breaker. He goes top. And then he starts showboating outside and then gets kicked in the head and clotheslined to the floor. And then he tries to lift Flair back in the ring, but he can't.
Oh, what I love about this, great ending now. It's a bullshit ending for the fans because of the double count out, but I love how they booked it. Flair's dead weight, so Teneru's having a hard time picking up Flair because if you're dead weight, it's hard to pick him up. By the time you get him in the ring, the referee counted 10. Double count out.
Yeah, it's a great double count out victory. You got Flair in there, like you know, both of them look good. So nobody, I guess they had to do that fucking finish. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Oh, look, Flair's the champion. They're not going to have Tenryu go over and win the title because Flair's got to bring it back to the United States. Tenryu is the face and the owner of this promotion. So they got to come up with some type of way where they both come out looking good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it, man. I guess we got these matches underway. We're about to get off the air here. So we'll be back next with some more matches, man. Thanks again, man.
All right. Talk to you next week, big man. Good night.
All right. Peace.